This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Not only was Friday Valentine's Day, but it was also the first official day that the Phase 1 trade deal went into effect. Tariffs on both sides of the agreement officially began coming down. The coronavirus outbreak is causing concern about China meeting its obligations under the agreement. An AgriPulse report says U.S. experts are worried about whether ports of interior transportation and soybean crushers are all operating at normal levels. However, industry sources and USDA data show that 1.6 million metric tons of U.S. soybeans were making their way across the Pacific, heading for China. The latest numbers show that 69,000 tons of soybeans left the U.S. and are headed to China during the week of January 31st. During that same time frame, USDA reports showed net sales of 132,000 tons of soybeans to China for 2019-2020's marketing year. Those numbers show that soybeans are still going to China, even though information coming from out of China is almost non-existent. Officials point out that we still don't know any of the specifics about how many purchases China will make under the Phase 1 agreement. Farm groups are looking for more specific information, but do not have any yet. And while much of the attention on the deal between the U.S. and China centers around concerns of China meeting its purchasing requirements under the agreement, there are also some deadlines it has to meet. There are some deadlines for U.S. to meet as well. Politico said on Friday that within the next 7 days, the USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service and China's Customs Agency are required to sign a protocol to allow for importation of U.S. potatoes. China is also required by February 24th to formally recognize the U.S. dairy safety system and that it is safe as its own, as well as allowing imports of American pork that's been inspected by USDA's Food Safety and Inspection Service. China is also required by March 14th to lift its ban on U.S. pet foods containing ruminant ingredients and to eliminate cattle age requirements for imports of U.S. beef and beef products. The two sides are also required by the same date to begin technical discussion intended to pave the way for China to import U.S. breeding cattle. In ag news here in the States, in a bid to land a limited trade pact with the U.S., Reuters says India has offered to partially open up its poultry and dairy market. The offer comes as India readies for President Trump's first official visit to the country at the end of the month. No country produces more milk than India, which has traditionally restricted dairy imports to protect the livelihood of the 80 million households involved in the industry. Last year, Trump suspended India's special trade designation that dates back to the 70s. That move came after India put price caps on medical devices such as cardiac stents and knee implants, as well as introduced new data localization requirements and e-commerce restrictions. The U.S. is India's second-largest trading partner, trailing China. India has offered to allow imports of U.S. chicken legs, turkey, and produce like blueberries and cherries, while also cutting tariffs on chicken legs by 75%, down to only 25%. U.S. negotiators would like that cut to be down to 10%, however. The Indian government is also offering to allow some access to dairy markets, but with a 5% tariff and quota. However, dairy imports would need a certificate saying they aren't derived from animals that have consumed feeds containing internal organs, blood, meal, or tissues of ruminants. Moving on to ag news from our neighbors up north in Canada, 3 months after a week-long strike back in November, the Canadian National Railroad again is being disrupted. Dennis Guy has more from Canada.
This time, Native Indigenous protesters are blockading CN Rail across the country, with primary blockades in and around Native lands in British Columbia, Manitoba, and southern Ontario. CN operates the main Canadian rail line running east and west, a vital carrier for goods, especially in winter months. The rail line is also the main Western farm commodities carrier to coastal ports for export. Todd Hames, chairman of Alberta's Grain Commission, said farmers across Canada are once again being threatened by rail service disruption.
We export roughly just over 80% of our product, so export is our livelihood. If we can't get our product to port, we don't get paid, we can't make a living, so it's becoming dire again.
Brent Mullen, president of Alberta Pork, says that because Canada's ag industry is so export-oriented, whether it's another railway disruption, a trade issue, or a social issue, Canadian farmers seem to take a hit.
So no matter what anybody's problem is, no matter what the trade issue, no matter what the disease that might arrive anywhere, the farmer in our country pretty much pays the burden for it.
The issue is complex, but it revolves around Wet'suwet'en sovereignty in central western British Columbia and a coastal gas-link pipeline project across Wet'suwet'en territory. Wet'suwet'en territory was never ceded to the Government of Canada, and no land treaty was ever established. Hereditary chiefs say the decision to approve a pipeline in their ancestral lands without consent is an infringement of their Aboriginal title and rights. Those rights are protected under Canada's Constitution. Ironically, elected chiefs and band councils from about 20 individual First Nations, including the Wet'suwet'en, have signed agreements consenting to the project. But the hereditary chiefs have gained support from some tribe members over elected band council agreements. The RCMP began moving into Wet'suwet'en territory late last week, arresting some lead protesters. Now, groups in various provinces are blockading CN rail lines in solidarity with grassroots Wet'suwet'en protesters. Perry Belgrade is the National Chief of the Assembly of First Nations. He says what's happening on Wet'suwet'en territory is highlighting the difference between First Nation law and Canadian law.
It's not Wet'suwet'en law that's being recognized and followed. And that's the issue here. You've got the Indian Act chiefs that have jurisdiction on the reserve lands, and they've done their due diligence. But in the ancestral territory lands of the Wet'suwet'en people, it's hereditary chiefs and their clans and their big houses that have the jurisdiction. There's this thing called the Indian Act that put the two-year elective system in place. That's what we have to move beyond. You're not going to achieve reconciliation when you criminalize political activism.
Reporting from Canada, I'm Dennis Guy.
Much above normal risk of major flooding this spring along the Mississippi River. That's the headline from Spring Flood Outlook. From the Spring Flood Outlook and the National Weather Service in the Quad Cities, says meteorologist Andy Irvin.
We are dealing statistically with a very high risk for flooding. We're talking in excess of 95% chance of reaching flood stage, even moderate flooding. And about a 95% chance of reaching major flooding. So those are about as high as percentages as are possible, given the fact that it's not currently occurring, which would, of course, be 100%. To that respect, we have several things that we're looking at that bring the flooding concern. And a lot of those situations really haven't changed much from last fall. We're dealing with a high soil moisture content across the entire upper Midwest. We've got plenty of snow upstream on the Mississippi, and the current stages on the Mississippi, while not flooding, are already fairly high compared to normal. So depending on how the snow melt occurs and how much rainfall occurs, with that overall setup of already wet soils and a lot of water in our system already would determine the severity of our flooding. And those are the details that we don't know specifics on at this time, but the overall probabilities of us reaching minor, moderate, and major flooding are extremely high.
The National Weather Service office in the Quad Cities looks at the flood outlook for the Mississippi along the river from Dubuque to near Keokuk, Iowa. This week is all about grain bin safety and the dangers they present to farmers. State Representative Dan Brady is a sponsor of House Resolution 621, which declares this week, February 16th through the 22nd, as Grain Bin Safety Week in Illinois. Brady says farm workers risk their lives every day when they enter large grain bins.
What it is historically to remind farmers and the entire industry in agriculture, we know that the accidents and the tragic fatalities have occurred in farm bins from over the years. And it's just a reminder to agriculture how important they are to this state and to this country, but also the dangers that lurk out there.
According to research at Purdue University, more than 900 cases of grain engulfment have been reported with a fatality rate of 62% over the last 50 years. And the Illinois beef industry will take center stage later this week. Illinois Beef Expo 2020 is Thursday through Saturday at the State Fairgrounds in Springfield. Illinois State Livestock Development Group's Nick Anderson has more.
It is. We'll talk about markets. We'll talk about access, trade. Those side conversations is really what it's about. And the latest technology that's out there for cattle farmers, whether it's feed bunks or buildings or feed, all those things at the trade show to take advantage of as you come to Springfield and enjoy beef genetics from great state of Illinois.
You can find the complete schedule for the Beef Expo at IllinoisBeefExpo.com. There'll also be the Illinois Performance Tested Bull Sale at 11 on Thursday. That'll be held at the Livestock Center at the State Fairgrounds, Springfield. Of course, as you know, today is President's Day, so there are no markets, but we'll recap what happened for you Friday. Corn for March was down 1 3/4 Friday to 377 3/4. New crop December down 3 1/4 to 388 3/4. Beans for March on Friday closed down 2 1/2 to 893 3/4 rather. New crop November beans were down 1 1/4 to 922 1/2. Wheat on Friday for March was down 1 1/2 to 542 3/4. Bean meal for March was down 80 cents to 291.10 per ton Friday. Soybean oil March was down 15 cents Friday to 30.57. Of course, we'll be joined again tomorrow at 9:30 with the opening markets from Sorrell's Farm Supply in Raymond. And that'll wrap up today's Ag News on a Monday. But remember, if you have anything for us, that can be emailed to us at WSMI at WSMIradio.com. For this Monday afternoon, this has been Gabe Osborne reporting WSMI Ag News.